This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the Creating Wealth Show with Jason Hartman. You're about to learn a new slant on investing, some exciting techniques, and fresh new approaches to the world's most historically proven asset class that will enable you to create more wealth and freedom than you ever thought possible. Jason is a genuine self-made multimillionaire who's actually been there and done it. He's a successful investor, lender, developer, and entrepreneur who's owned properties in 11 states, had hundreds of tenants, and been involved in thousands of real estate transactions. This program will help you follow in Jason's footsteps on the road to your financial independence day. You really can do it. And now, here's your host, Jason Hartman, with the complete solution for real estate investors.
Welcome to the Creating Wealth Show. This is episode number 587. 587. We're in the home stretch for episode 600. Of course, this is your host, Jason Hartman, and I'm so grateful and thankful that you joined me today for an episode that I'll probably need a bit of latitude on. I'll need a bit of latitude from you, my dear listeners, because I am going to just call this the Stream of Consciousness episode. How do you like that? Where I'm going to just kind of talk about a variety of things, you know. I'm constantly thinking about the show. I'm constantly thinking about you listeners. I mean, it is many times a day that I am thinking about all of you wonderful listeners. And every time I'm out in the world experiencing something, reading something, seeing something, I'm thinking, oh gosh, that's good for the show. I got to talk to my listeners about that. And I collect these things and I have stacks and stacks and stacks of stuff. And I never get around to it. And I'm not going to get around to it today either. But I'm going to hopefully take a few out of the stack and talk about a few of these things. Okay. So first off, of course, you know, this is a real estate investing show, right? Well, you know, it is. Yes, of course. Income property is the most historically proven asset class in the world. But there's a lot more to life than talking about gross rent multipliers, cap rates, return on investment, ROI. Of course, there's a lot more than that. And that's why every 10th episode, we do something off topic and we do this network wide, although it's not always done. You know, my editors don't always catch it, but you know, the idea is we do it network wide and on all the shows, whether it be, you know, the survival show, the longevity and biohacking show, Solomon Success, any of our shows out there. Every 10th episode, the idea is we go off topic and discuss something of general interest. But today, I'm going to discuss some real estate stuff and just some other stuff that you kind of ask me about a lot, and I just never seem to get around to talking about it. So give me a little latitude. I hope it'll be valuable to you. I'm really hoping it will. And I'm going to talk about a variety of things. So what, you know, some of the questions I'm constantly getting asked are, Jason, what books are you reading? What audiobooks are you listening to? You know, where do you get all this content for the show? What news services do you read? What blogs do you read? Tell us about that. So I'm going to try and cover a little of that today, okay? I'm going to talk about some of my latest book readings and maybe a little info on those. But I got to tell you, when it comes to books, I have a gripe. I have a complaint. And you know what? I bet you'll share this one with me. You know, it's amazing how things just grow up and evolve, how whole industries evolve. And that includes the real estate industry and the book publishing industry and the world of podcasting and radio and television and everything, you know, the medical industry, the military industrial complex, everything in human experience, right? It all sort of has a way that it grows up and evolves. And it has these old, you know, every part of life has these old vestiges from the past that are just frickin' stupid. Yet we still play by these dumb old rules, and it's just crazy, okay? One of them about the book industry that just bugs me endlessly. is that why is it that books have to be a certain length? You know, it's because when they were always in paper, people bought them by the pound, okay? And I remember, you know, you may not even know this, by the way, listeners. Do you know that I am the author of 11 books? Yes, 11 books. You can find them out there on Amazon, etc., all the usual places. 11 books. Jason Hartman has authored 11 books. Why haven't you heard much about those books? Well, I'll tell you why. Because they are all on the New York Times worst seller list. Yes, the New York Times worst seller list. There isn't such a list. I'm just making that up. If there were such a list, my books might make it. I've never really been crazy about marketing books. In fact, the book publishing industry just bugs the heck out of me. So what's my complaint? Why do they have to be a certain length? Why is it that when I... Now, Kindle admittedly has changed this a little bit with these Kindle shorts and stuff. But, you know, let's take Audible, for example. You know, you probably listen to Audible. And it bugs the crap out of me. We had the founder of Audible on the show, on my Speaking of Wealth show. It bugs the heck out of me that these audiobooks all have to be, you know, 7, 8, 12 hours long. I mean, give me a flipping break. And they're just filling it with filler most of the time. In fact, I'll be listening, you know, it's like an Audible, for example, not always reading it, but I'll be listening to an audiobook, and then I'll listen to another one. And by golly, they're telling the same stories. You know, all of these sort of contemporary business books, they've all got the same examples where they're talking about, you know, these companies we all know and love or maybe even hate sometimes, but you know, all the big companies and what they're doing and all their great ideas and sharing it with their readers, right? And I can't even keep track of what book I'm in at the time because they tell the same stories. It's absurd. This is filler. It's crap. It's a waste of time. That's why, you know, that's why, frankly, I like podcast medium a little bit better. And yours truly is known to go off on tangents, of course. And most of you, at least the ones that are I'm hearing from, say you like that and you think it's interesting. So this one will probably be the worst one of those episodes. If you don't like the tangent thing, this episode isn't for you. But Friday's episode you'll like better as we talk about the timeless wisdom of Earl Nightingale and Dan Sullivan and answer some listener questions on that show on Friday. And then, of course, we got a bunch of other awesome shows coming up for you, too, every Monday, Wednesday, Friday. So the books, yeah, they're just too long. They've got to shorten these things. Why is it that a book needs to be 200 or 300 pages long? Why is it that an audiobook needs to be, you know, 6 to 12 hours long? It's just completely absurd. You know, tell me the author's idea and let me get on with my life. If you think you're selling something by the pound or by the length of it, well, you know what? I would actually pay extra if you just abridge it for me and give me the shorter version and save my time. Because the most valuable thing I have and the most valuable thing any of us have is what? It's our time. And that's why we're looking to income property as the most historically proven asset class in the world, because it offers leverage. In fact, I may have told you this before, but I've been talking when I'm interviewed on other shows, and I'm interviewed all the time, you know, a few times a week on other shows. And several months ago, I came up with kind of my, what I'll call my stump speech. You know, politicians, they have a stump speech, right? Sort of a few talking points that they always hit on when they go around and they talk to people. And so my stump speech is about leverage. And it's about gaining leverage in the three highly critical, arguably the three most important areas of life: our business, our biology, and our investments. BBI, think of it that way. Our business, our biology, and our investments. So in business, you know, I talk about my business career, which has been just phenomenal. Thank you very much. I'm just kidding. No, but it's been pretty good. And I also talk about some of the stuff I'm learning from one of my newer shows, the Longevity and Biohacking Show, and talk about gaining leverage on our biology. And our client, Elizabeth, who was one of our first Venture Alliance members, she was at the Tony Robbins event with me last weekend. You know, she was talking about Fitbit, and she's really into Fitbit. And we were talking about the quantified self movement, which is a big part of gaining leverage over our biology. And I've talked about the quantified self movement, or QS, before. And just, you know, to reiterate what that is, it's just tracking things in our lives so that we can better understand what's going on with our bodies, with our sleep. You know, my toothbrush, my new Oral-B toothbrush, has an app on my iPhone, and it tracks my brushing habits. Yes, you may think, well, you know, isn't that just a little bit OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder there, right? Not really. I don't know. You know, dental health is pretty important to overall health. You know, strokes are caused because people don't take care of their teeth. Did you know that? You probably did. So I won't go into explaining how plaque gets into your bloodstream and then, you know, it turns into a stroke, right? And that's just because you didn't take care of your teeth. So this stuff is pretty important. And then, of course, you know, I've been monitoring my sleep for a while. I got a Fitbit, my second Fitbit, just yesterday, and I've already walked 10,000 steps today. Elizabeth inspired me to get another Fitbit. Actually, I'm at 11,307. And the average American, I don't know if it's the average person, but I'm pretty sure it's the average American now, you know, for whatever these statistics are worth, walks about 3,000 steps a day. So if you can get to the 10,000 per day goal, and I bet you can really easily without feeling like you're even making any real effort, that's a pretty big accomplishment, you know, just to do that. And so that's part of all the quantified self-movement, right? And so where was I going with that? I don't know. Anyway, well, was that a tangent? I think it might have been a tangent. Oh, tangent alert. All right. So I wanted to talk to you, next subject here, a little bit about, it was about my leverage, right? So we gain leverage over our business or our career. We gain leverage over our biology. And we also gain leverage over our investments, which is really the core focus, obviously, of this show, gaining leverage over our investments. So the most leverage-friendly asset class in the world, well, of course, you know what that is. It's real estate. It's income property. I mean, try going to the bank and getting the kind of leverage that you can get on your real estate, 3-decade-long, artificially low, arguably below the cost of inflation, okay? Arguably negative interest rates offering you the opportunity for considerable inflation-induced debt destruction and getting paid to borrow. So go to the bank and try and get 3-decade-long, incredibly low-rate fixed financing on a car, a business. You know, how about those bars of gold you have that you lost money on, right? Or those silver coins or anything else. You can't do it. Real estate, the most leverage-friendly asset class in the world. Very powerful. And as Archimedes said, give me a lever long enough and I will move the entire world. So whatever we're doing, we've got to gain leverage. Leverage is the key to success in any endeavor. Leverage, leverage, leverage. The real estate folks will say location, location, location. But I don't know. I recently put a deposit down on a Tesla, and it's got that autopilot, which is about the closest thing we've got nowadays to the self-driving car. And it's getting pretty close. It's getting pretty good. Does that change that location, location, location paradigm? I think it's going to put a lot of pressure on it. So if you think that you got to own property in really expensive markets that don't make any sense for investment or cash flow, I think there's going to be some pressure on those types of properties, some downward price pressure and equalization over to actually lower price properties. This might actually, in a way, now, you know, we see this pendulum swing back and forth all the time. So in the post-World War II era, we saw the emergence of Levittown, right? We saw the emergence of suburbia, suburban America. Why did we see that? Well, because of prosperity, low gas prices, the romantic nature of the automobile, everybody wanting a yard and a white picket fence, and all that kind of stuff, we saw the rise of suburbia. And in recent years, we've seen some shift away from that, where all of these urban cores around the country have been redeveloped. And there has been this movement to get people to move back to the inner city, the urban core. But, and I like that, by the way. I love the concept of mixed-use development. Now, granted, it depends who you are and what your lifestyle is. I'm single, okay? Well, actually, I'm not single. I'm independently owned and operated. See, if you're single, don't call yourself single. You're independently owned and operated, right? That's what it really is. Anyway, so I'm independently owned and operated, and I like to live in walkable areas. So that's me, but that may be different for you. You know, if you've got a family and you got four kids and you really want a yard and that house with a picket fence, right? It's different. You might want to live in a suburban environment. But what's really happened with this movement toward revitalizing all these urban cores is we found that it's pretty expensive, you know. Try buying one of these mid-rise or high-rise condos or even renting one of those apartments in any of these urban cores around the country that have, you know, they're trying to get them to come back and successfully in many places. And it's pretty expensive, though. You know, this is not inexpensive stuff. So will the advent of the self-driving car and low energy cost really be another big upward push toward more suburban living? I think that's very possible. None of us really know what will happen or how things will work out, but it's arguable. It's definitely arguable. Okay, so leverage, that's the key thing. Give me a lever long enough and I will move the entire world. That's what Archimedes said. Get leverage over any and all areas of your life. Think about it. This even applies to things like relationships and soft things like that, right? It applies to communication, because if you can communicate better, if you can be more effective, and that's why knowledge is power. Knowledge is obviously a big area of leverage. But even more so than knowledge, it's wisdom, which is, I mean, I don't know what the technical definition of wisdom is, but I would call it knowledge in action. Okay, Dennis Waitley used to say honest knowledge in action or something like that. But wisdom is like applied knowledge, at least to me. And so if we can get leverage by learning how to do things better, right, it makes us more effective in any area of life. Well, that brings me around to good old Tony Robbins, right? And I, you know, told you I was at his seminar last weekend. Now, I discovered Tony Robbins a long, long time ago. In fact, longer ago than some of my listeners might have even been alive. In fact, I know that for sure, by the way, because our youngest listener is a guy named Diego, and he's 12. And, well, that's the youngest one I know of, at least. There may be some listeners out there who are, we'll call them passive, not by choice listeners, we'll call them by default listeners. So, you know, if you're driving around listening to the show and you got your baby in the car, they are getting smarter all the time, just passively, by listening to the show. But Diego is a listener by choice, and he's 12. So I know I discovered Tony Robbins more than 12 years ago. So there you go. Anyway, where was I going with that? Oh, another tangent. So I discovered Tony Robbins a long time ago, and it was after I discovered the four big mentors in my life: Jim Rohn, Dennis Waitley, Earl Nightingale, and Zig Ziglar. Tony Robbins came a few years after that, and you know, it is really interesting to kind of study his material. And I'd been to the last seminar I've been to of his was years ago, and I actually staffed it. I volunteered to work on the crew. Can you imagine this? A guy that's got a net worth of like $400 million, according to Celebrity Net Worth. By the way, how do you get in Celebrity Net Worth? And I keep wondering why I'm not in there. Well, I'm not that rich, but I'm doing all right. But how do you get in there, and how would they ever know? You know, I can't imagine how the Forbes 400 really does it and how they really can figure out what people are worth. I mean, you know, rich people like to hide their money more than they like to show it off most of the time, because, you know, you spend the first half of your working life, at least, making money and growing your wealth, and then you spend the second half trying to keep it, you know, insulated from the lawyers and the tax collector and all of the other things that tend to steal and destroy your wealth, right? You know, spendthrift children, anything like that. And so Tony Robbins, where was I going with this? Okay. So yeah, it's amazing that someone with a net worth of like $400 million gets people to volunteer and staff his seminars, but that just shows his personal power. So good for him. So I thought I'd share just a couple concepts from the seminars. I'd talk about some of the books, and I got a couple of real estate articles I want to talk about. And you know what? I'm already going kind of long, so I better get on it here and mellow out on the tangents. So first of all, Tony's material. He talked during the event when we weren't dancing for 12 hours a day. I mean, it's like a crazy event. It's like a concert. It's a multimedia performance where you do not need to plan any exercise when you go to a Tony Robbins event, because you'll just get it right there. Literally, my calves hurt from dancing, from jumping up and down. So that's the kind of event it is if you haven't been to one. So he talks about the molders of meaning and the triad, and how the source of all human emotion is really from these three factors. And if you think about this, I think you'll agree, okay? Number one, the pattern of our physiology. So if someone is unhappy, for example, and certainly we've all had unhappy times in our lives, hopefully they don't last too long, but can you really just decide to be happy? Can you just make a decision? Well, not completely. And this isn't all Tony Robbins. A lot of this is just weaving my own thoughts and opinion into this. But he's the impetus for it because he says physiology. So, you know, and you've probably heard his material and you're familiar with it. So if you want to be depressed, you got to treat your body a certain way. You've got to slouch and hunch over and frown and, you know, look with downcast eyes. But if you want to be happy and confident, you will pull your shoulders back. You'll stand up straight or sit up straight. You'll put a smile on your face. And literally, you can hack your own physiology to force yourself to be happy. Now, Robbins didn't say this, but I'm just saying it. Remember that acronym GIGO? It came from the early days of the computer era, GIGO. It means garbage in, garbage out. Okay, garbage in, G-I-G-O, garbage in, garbage out. Meaning that whatever you put into the machine is basically what you would get out of it. And it's the same way with our mind and our body, right? So Earl Nightingale used to talk about how our thoughts or our environment is a mirror-like reflection of our thoughts. But our thoughts are also a reflection of our environment. And we're going to hear more from Earl Nightingale on the next show, by the way. So that's coming up as a Flashback Friday episode in just a couple of days here. And so these things are circular, right? They're a circular cycle. They could be called a vicious cycle if they're not done properly, or they could be called a virtuous cycle, either one. So if you want to change your emotions, change your body. Just move your body differently, and you will help create input to the way you feel and the way you think. The second of these three in the triad is focus. What are we focusing on? On what are we focusing? Proper grammar there, by the way. So in physiology, he says, how you use your physical body, such as breath, posture, and movement, and focus, he says, whatever you focus on, you will feel. So are we replaying past traumas and past bad events and things that make us feel bad, or are we replaying positive experiences in our mind? And this focus will certainly influence us. Certainly, we've all had the situation where, you know, we'll be thinking something and then it will appear in the actual real world. And it's just because we see it, you know, if we believe, you know, I remember Robert Schuller a long time ago in one of his books, the late Robert Schuller now. I remember his first book that I read was Tough Times Never Last, But Tough People Do. What a great title, by the way. Tough Times Never Last, But Tough People Do. So Schuller would say, you know, when talking about God, of course, you know, he was a religious man. He would say, it's not that you'll, you know, most people say, well, I'll believe it when I see it. But there's some validity to the other way around, isn't there? You'll see it when you believe it. And that's true of so many things, probably everything in our life, in our world, in our human experience. Because if we focus on something, it is much more likely to be attracted to us. And we're much more likely to even notice it. If we focus on the opposite or the inverse of it, then we're gonna see whatever we focus on. I don't want to say that way, the opposite, because as Dennis Whately talks about how the subconscious mind is a magnet. And even if we focus on the opposite, oh, like this, you know, I don't want to be poor. I don't want to be poor. I don't want to be poor. Well, then we're going to attract poverty. I want to be rich. I want to be rich. I want to be rich, right? You're going to attract, you know, what you think about, okay? So the subconscious mind is like that homing torpedo, as Whately puts it, and it will just move toward, it will move in the direction of our currently dominant thought, period. So we can't say what we don't want. We've got to think in terms of what we do want. That's how we have to think. So focus is number two. And number three, language and meaning, okay? As soon as we put things into words to an experience, it changes the meaning we experience. So for example, we experience something and then we describe it either to somebody else or to ourselves. And that experience makes it, or that languaging of the experience makes it real depending on how we said it. It just, you know, we create our own reality. And this really is an amazing thing. And it's not really woo-woo. There's actually some really solid scientific fact behind it. And a lot of it was pioneered by, and this isn't Tony Robbins, by the way. This is what I discovered a long time ago in a from a company named CyberVision, who was an educational content producer. They originally introduced me to a Stanford professor named Carl Prebram, Dr. Carl Prebram. And you can look him up. He's got a Wikipedia entry and so forth. And he really made some real scientific connections between thoughts and things. It's quite amazing. The theory is known as holographic brain theory. And, you know, you have to make somewhat of a leap to buy that, but the leap is not that big. And certainly we all know that there are things 10, 20, 30, 40, 100 years ago that if we described the way the world is today back then, we'd say that's, you know, that's sorcery, it's witchcraft, it's nuts, it's not scientific. Well, That's just because it wasn't possible back then. But one day it became possible and it became understood. So similarly, there's a lot of stuff going on now that we do not yet understand, but we will understand it eventually. And then we'll look back and we'll say, oh, well, obviously, you know, holographic brain theory, duh. You know, of course that was true. So just a few things to share with Tony about the Tony Robbins event there. One of the things he shared was he mentioned during the weekend a book called The Talent Code by Daniel Coyle. And I have already finished it, by the way. I jumped right into that one and finished it. And once again, same kind of complaint, you know, a lot of material on a lot of studies and, you know, gosh, don't waste my time. Get to the point. So where's the beef, as the Wendy's commercial used to say, right? Here it is. I mean, at least unless I miss something in the Talent Code, which, you know, it's a great concept, but you just don't need hundreds of pages to explain it, okay? So we have this basically insulation on all of our neurons, our connections in our brains, and it's called myelin. And it grows and thickens as we age. And this is why impulsivity decreases as we age. And he talked a lot about how, you know, these different parts of the world suddenly produced all these talented people in a given area, whether it be art or music or science or whatever. And it's all about the myelin. But it left me with the nagging question that I am still asking. What am I supposed to do about this? Well, basically, I mean, unless I missed a whole bunch on that book, you know, if you've read the book, just feel free to tell me what an idiot I am and how I missed the point. But it seems that, you know, immersion, okay, so immerse yourself in something. If you want to learn about real estate investing, get immersed in it, okay? Come to all of our events, listen to every show, which, by the way, a lot of you do. You say to me all the time, I just discovered your show, and I went back and listened to all 580 whatever episodes we were at, right? And I hear that constantly from you guys, by the way, and thank you for listening. I really appreciate that. Immersion. And then after the immersion phase, and by the way, just one more comment on immersion. You know the best way to learn how to be a real estate investor? Buy some flipping investment property. Yeah, because you'll show up with a whole different person, and that will be a different part of you that will show up to the game when you actually own the properties, okay? So buy some properties and get yourself some on-the-job training, if you will. That's the best way to learn how to be an investor. It's the way I did it. When I was 20 years old, I bought my first rental property, and boom, I was immersed. I had full immersion on the job training, learning how to deal with an investment property. That's how I really learned. I didn't have a podcast like this. They didn't even have podcasts back then. In fact, the word was not even invented. In fact, it was a long ways off from being invented, the word podcast. So immersion. And then after immersion, spaced repetition. So I'm always saying to our listeners, you know, in the beginning, come to all our events. And then at least twice a year, come back to another event and get immersed again. I can't tell you the number of people. And by the way, one of them reminded me, our client, and we've had him on the show twice now, Mr. David Porter. David, you out there listening? Thank you for being on the show and for all your business. David bought a bunch of properties, and he did very well with them, did an excellent job. And he was on the show talking about that twice now, David Porter. And he talked about the free lunch metric and all of that. So he immersed himself. And then, you know, he kind of just managed his properties. And for a few years, we didn't hear too much from him. And, you know, everything was going along and he was just doing his thing. And then somehow or another, he got kind of reconnected with us. And he came to the last Meet the Masters earlier this year in January. And many of you met him there who are listening. And then he started listening to the podcast again and, you know, just got back into it. And we'll see if he's listening now, because he'll probably comment on the fact that I mentioned him on the show. But so immersion and spaced repetition, and that's the way to create more of this myelin that helps us become basically smarter and more talented at any given thing. Okay. Books. I got to wrap up here. Okay. So a couple of books that I've been into lately. One is called The Organized Mind: Thinking Straight in the Age of Information Overload. That one was on Audible, and it's just, you know, 16 hours and 24 ridiculous minutes long. It's way too long. Doesn't need to be that long, but like I said, that's my complaint about this kind of stuff. But it did have some pretty interesting points in there, and I enjoyed them. And then another great one was recommended by one of our local market specialists in Chicago. Of course, we have these local market specialists all over the country, but he recommended this one, and I really liked it. It's called Disrupt You! Exclamation by Jay Samet. And that was really all about how things are changing so quickly, and it's like volatile, and how we've got to, you know, find better ways to adapt and have more creativity. And this is just super important, of course, and you've just got to do it, right? But he says basically, and I, you know, I can't remember all of it now because I'm like three, four other books in. But he talked a lot about how we've just got to take whatever we're doing and we've got to disrupt it ourselves. We've got to constantly do the next thing. And if we're in business, a lot of business thinkers and thought leaders talk about this. They say, you know, be willing to cannibalize your own business, because if you don't do it, somebody else will. Many examples of this, of course. Amazon did it with Kindle. You know, they were in the book business, right? And then they said, you know what? Books are going to move toward the electronic thing. And if we don't do it, Barnes & Noble's going to do it first, and someone's going to beat us to the punch, so we better just do it. Certainly, Apple did that, and Steve Jobs convinced the music industry to do it because they were hurting. And so, you know, that probably the music industry actually did it way too late. They should have cannibalized themselves with the concept of the per song purchase much sooner. But Steve Jobs finally got him to do it. So Disrupt You, great book, highly recommend it. But again, all of these things are too damn long. Okay, just before I wrap up here, little bit on real estate. One thing I want to tell you, there is a website that can tell you if your house, you're going to like this, if your house might be haunted. Well, really not exactly that, but, you know, in at least California, I don't know what the laws are around the country. I'm sure they have laws about this kind of stuff in most places, if not all of them. But in California, I'm pretty sure the rule is that if you're selling your house or a house and someone died in the property within the last 3 years, you have to disclose that to the new buyer. And I'll never forget the time I was with my girlfriend, Jennifer. And at the time, girlfriend Jennifer. Remember, I'm independently owned and operated now. But I was with Jennifer, and we went. And this was when I lived in Newport Beach, and we went to look at a property in Laguna Beach. And this was during a recessionary time. And I remember we pulled up to this property and walked up to the front door. It was vacant, and I thought, how can this property? How much was it? Maybe it was, I don't know, about $700,000 at the time. And, you know, I was looking for a house to buy. And maybe it was like $600,000, $700,000. It was pretty inexpensive for what I'm about to tell you. It was in Laguna Beach, okay, which is an expensive area. And we walked up to the front door of this house, and it was on the inland side of PCH, but it had a very nice view, because as we were up at the front door, we turned around and looked back, and you could see the crashing waves and the ocean and the sunset, and wow, we thought, that's pretty good. We look inside the house, and the house was, it was nice. It was nicely appointed, and I was thinking, you know, I'm going to buy this. And I called the listing agent and talked to them about it. And he said, well, you know, we have to tell you that so there was a death in the house. And I said, well, that kind of freaks me out a little bit. Give me the details. The woman who lived there, unfortunately, committed suicide. She shot herself. Well, okay, this is a little spooky, terrible thing. You know, if I lived there, I'd probably think about it all the time. It'd be sort of freaky. But she shot herself in the master bedroom. And I thought, you know, I don't know, call me superstitious, whatever. I just can't live in that house, okay? And that house was probably a good 30% below market. So I don't know what it ever sold for, but I do remember that it sold. And anyway, this website, if you want to check this out, is called diedinhouse.com. There are probably others out there that might do this too, but I just read about this one, diedinhouse.com. And I went to do it. They do charge you for this. They're probably making a good bit of money off this morbid thing. $11.99 per search. Check that out if you want to, just so you know about it. Last thing on real estate, marijuana. Yes. Well, this was an interesting article I read on Newser. Michael Hawthorne wrote it. And it says that marijuana is having a big impact on Denver real estate. It says it's the new disruptive industry. And it was just interesting. It talked about the legalization of marijuana having this dramatic effect on real estate in Denver. And it said that it's basically reinvigorated the city's industrial areas, and the rest of the city has become unaffordable for some longtime residents. Commercial real estate has been really kickstarted, especially in the industrial market, and that's where these growers are probably renting out facilities and so forth. They have near record high rents and very low vacancies. Between 2009 and 2014, the pot business accounted for more than a third of all industrial space leased in the city. And one in every 11 industrial buildings in central Denver is now associated with marijuana. Wow, that is the new disruptive industry. And then it talks also about the housing market there. And according to real estate broker J.P. Spears, he says millennials are moving to the city to smoke pot, while entrepreneurs are moving to the city to start pot businesses. He says, quote, I do believe that there has been a huge amount of individuals who have moved out here, meaning into the city, out here to Denver, specifically for the marijuana industry, and it has affected the housing market, unquote. So, pretty interesting. Now, you know me, I'm a libertarian. I just kind of believe in legalization of most everything, but I sort of wonder if the whole marijuana thing is kind of a government conspiracy to make everybody kind of lazy and dumb them down. We will see. We will see. But we'll let that play out and see what happens. But it's definitely a trend that's changing things. So, I think that's enough for today. Okay, I will talk to you Friday, Flashback Friday. We're going to talk about Earl Nightingale and Timeless Wisdom of Earl Nightingale and Dan Sullivan. Be sure to go to jasonhartman.com and register for our upcoming Orlando property tour. By the way, that is almost full. At last count, we had about, I think we have 41 people now. So we are almost going to have to say we're full on the Orlando property tour. Did I say Denver? Orlando, Florida, you know, Disney World and stuff. So Orlando property tour coming up fast, almost full, almost sold out. JasonHartman.com, click on events. Venture Alliance in Dubai in February. That's going to be fantastic. By the way, welcome to Jeff and Shannon, our newest Venture Alliance members. We're happy to have you with us. And then also, of course, Meet the Masters. Tickets are selling very briskly for that, and we are limited on size for that one as well. That will be in La Jolla, California in early January. Go to jasonhartman.com, get your tickets for all of that stuff. By the way, Venture Alliance has its own little website, VentureAllianceMastermind.com, but jasonhartman.com for the others. Anyway, thank you so much for listening to my Stream of Consciousness episode. where I just kind of rambled around a lot of stuff. I got a lot more books to tell you about, a lot more articles to tell you about, a lot more subjects coming up for a future episode. But overall, I just want to wish you all happy investing. Thank you so much for listening, reviewing, and telling your friends about the show. We'll talk to you on the next episode.
I've never really thought of Jason as subversive, but I just found out that's what Wall Street considers him to be.
Really? Now, how is that possible at all?
Simple. Wall Street believes that real estate investors are dangerous to their schemes because the dirty truth about income property is that it actually works in real life.
I know. I mean, how many people do you know, not including insiders, who created wealth with stocks, bonds, and mutual funds? Those options are for people who only want to pretend they're getting ahead.
Stocks and other non-direct traded assets are a losing game for most people. The typical scenario is you make a little, you lose a little, and spin your wheels for decades.
That's because the corporate crooks running the stock and bond investing game will always see to it that they win. This means, unless you're one of them, you will not win.
And unluckily for Wall Street, Jason has a unique ability to make the everyday person understand investing the way it should be. He shows them a world where anything less than a 26% annual return is disappointing.
Yep, and that's why Jason offers a one-book set on creating wealth that comes with 20 digital download audios. He shows us how we can be excited about these scary times and exploit the incredible opportunities this present economy has afforded us.
We can pick local markets untouched by the economic downturn, exploit packaged commodities investing, and achieve exceptional returns safely and securely.
I like how he teaches you how to protect the equity in your home before it disappears and how to outsource your debt obligations to the government.
And this set of advanced strategies for wealth creation is being offered for only $197.
To get your Creating Wealth Encyclopedia Book 1, complete with over 20 hours of audio, go to jasonhartman.com/store.
If you want to be able to sit back and collect checks every month just like a banker, Jason's Creating Wealth Encyclopedia series is for you. This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, all rights reserved. For distribution or publication rights and media interviews, please visit www.hartmanmedia.com or email media@hartmanmedia.com. Nothing on this show should be considered specific personal or professional advice. Please consult an appropriate tax, legal, real estate, or business professional for individualized advice. Opinions of guests are their own, and the host is acting on behalf of Platinum Properties Investor Network, Inc., exclusively.